Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, the latest news, the trending topic this week has been the fall of Signature Bank. Everyone's talking about it in every industry. And I'm thinking to myself, what is the impact on EB5? Is this a crisis we're going to see?
Yeah, well, Mark, I can tell you, last Sunday when it was announced, it wasn't a wave. It was an avalanche, literally an avalanche of texts and calls and emails that I received from investors, from project people, from just everyone within the industry, because Signature Bank is so connected with EB5. There's a lot to discuss about this because I'm sure a lot of our audience are really not so sure, and those who do know are concerned. So I thought it would be wonderful to have someone who's really, really in tune with this industry. And no one better but Jill Jones from NES. Jill,
oh,
welcome.
Mona, thank you so much for the introduction. But I have to say, I'm not NES anymore.
Oh,
NES
oops.
Was acquired 2 years ago now, pushing three, actually, next month, by JTC Group. It is a UK company that specializes in fund administration, but on a global level. So
oh, gosh,
take
yes.
NES and give it a shot of steroids, and now we're JTC.
I do apologize. I know you're JTC. It's just that we keep referring to you as NES because, Jill, we've been working in the industry with you guys for years and years, and you've been NES for us for so long.
I know. We almost have tattoos.
So new name, but obviously years and years and years of all that previous experience.
That's right.
So Jill, you've been working with Signature Bank as NES, as JTC, from as long as I remember also. So I know that you are as concerned and you know exactly what I'm talking about when I say how associated Signature Bank is within the EB5 industry.
I do. So I worked with the Signature Bank team over 11 years ago now to get them interested in EB5, get them to understand what the program was about, and work through some of the common concerns that the banks that are out there have about EB-5 and where these funds are coming from and how they get their compliance departments to cooperate and actually service these accounts.
Right. Well, at this point, I can say that EB-5, perhaps Signature Bank, is the largest bank holding EB-5 funds, both in escrow and deposits and just being involved with EB-5.
I would agree with you. So Signature Bank really has a sweet spot for EB-5, and where some banks have come into the market and exited, others have limited their exposure to EB-5. Signature really went all in.
Right. Well, I'll come back to that shortly. But what I do want to ask you is the fact that not only are they the largest bank holding EB-5 accounts, but they're the largest bank holding escrow. One of the big concerns which came up this last week, Jill, before the government announced that they were actually giving, I won't say a bailout to Signature, but at least making sure that the deposits were all made whole, was the fact that there was a piece running by one of the EB5 attorneys. None of the EB5 money in escrow was actually protected. This really caused a panic. Let's just discuss with our audience the whole point of having escrow and EB5.
Yeah, Mona, there's a couple of reasons, and maybe we can just step back in time a little bit and talk about why escrow is there in the first place.
I think that would be a good idea, yes.
Terrific. So raising money in a foreign country and having it brought into a U.S. investment is a challenge. One of the challenges is the investors are not here, so they can't walk into a bank branch and create a relationship. They can't show an ID and sign a signature card. And so when a bank is opening these escrow accounts, they really have to understand that their customer is the issuer or the regional center that's involved in the offering, and that those particular people and those around them, the migration agents who have sourced the investors, the immigration attorneys who are filing the petitions on behalf of those investors, are doing the due diligence that a bank regulator would require them to have done. And so the first challenge is finding a bank that can get comfortable with receiving this type of money. And so escrow is really a way to make that happen in a secure and protected sort of way. When the money comes in, it's under the tax ID and the name of what we in the industry refer to as a subscriber representative. That's a US entity that can satisfy all of the Know Your Customer requirements. And that subscriber representative is responsible for collecting the flow through information, a W-8 BEN or a copy of a passport, to validate who the investors are for which the money is coming into the account. Because it's owned in this way, it means that the money still actually belongs to the investors. And that's the security piece and the reason for the escrow, is that nobody can take it and use it unless certain release triggers have been met. And that's what gives the investors the comfort to go ahead and send their money over here to the United States and get the process started.
It's not actually within the EB-5 regulations, though, Jill. Escrow, I would say, for many of the projects, is more of a marketing tool.
I 100% agree with you, Mona. It is not required. We see it as a best practice, again, for the security component and also for the convenience. It allows for one set of wire instructions and one central location for all of the funds to flow into.
Yeah, I agree. We encourage all of our projects to use escrow. So obviously, when there was this rumor that money is in an escrow would not be protected, that was a big deal.
The unique thing about escrow is when it's structured correctly, it's considered a fiduciary account. And there's two ways to prove that it's a fiduciary account. One is the account titling, and two is the books and records underneath keeping track of the sub-accounts for each of the individual beneficiaries. When you have a fiduciary structured account, the FDIC insurance flows through to the beneficiaries. So when you talk about a limit of $250,000, that's not for the aggregate balance, it's for each investor. So while that's not the full amount, it's at least a significant portion of each investor's deposit.
Well, most of these escrow accounts would not have the full amount anyway, because the way a lot of these escrows worked was that there was holdback monies. And I think it was the holdback money that people were afraid of. And I think projects were afraid because they thought that it would all the money in the account not be insured, because we're not talking about 250,000, we're talking about several million.
We are, but if we think about it, under this fiduciary structure, each investor with a holdback may have $100,000 or $50,000, and that certainly is covered by the FDIC insurance.
Right. So I really not sure where this rumor began, but as I said, this rumor did cause a bit of an issue earlier on, and it has caused a number of projects to reach out to me to say, can we just not do escrow? And I really don't feel comfortable without doing any escrow. I don't know. Have you had this experience this week?
In fact, I've not been asked not to have escrow. I've only been asked to move an escrow.
So how have you been handling this?
There are a couple of ways. So it depends on who the escrow agent is. There's really two structures here, where the bank holding the money is the escrow agent and the depository, or where there's an independent escrow agent with a different bank for a depository. If the escrow agent is independent, it has the flexibility to go ahead and move the funds to any depository bank. And so in that bucket, those funds moved quite easily. Where Signature Bank was both escrow agent and depository, there's a process now to be worked through with the FDIC to allow for a successor agent to step in and to transfer the whole task, not just the deposit, but the acting as an escrow agent to a different provider.
Well, that sounds as though it's pretty seamless, Jill, but I don't know if this is going to be the case right at the end, because we were very nervous about how all this escrow money is going to be shifted to different accounts, if different accounts are going to be needed. Because at this point, Signature's obviously closed. It's now Signature Bridge, and we don't know how long Signature Bridge will remain in EB-5 or whether or not the team, from what I've heard, will be moving to another bank.
That's absolutely correct. But Mona, you mentioned the flood or avalanche of calls and emails we got on the weekend, and things were very much in turmoil at that point. I'm pleased to say at this point in the week that we've successfully moved money and we've successfully moved escrows. So I think a lot of the concern that was out there has quieted as we work through processes and get these things done, I'd say that we have less of a crisis now and more of a learning experience. We've learned a lot about ways to keep people safe and to honor what these investments are really for at the end of the day.
Well, yeah, that is so super important. And the other thing which has come out during this week of discussions, et cetera, is the incompetency of so many other of the other banks when it comes to EB5. And perhaps I'm being a little harsh by saying the word incompetent. It's really ignorance for EB5, because some of the horror stories, we ourselves were involved with a big fight with one of the banks for one of our clients. One of the banks had dipped into the escrow account to pay for certain fees. And while we're only talking about fees like $55 or $65, that's enough for someone to have their EB5 denied because their full $500 at that point would not be there. So just trying to explain to the bank that they can't take fees out of the escrow account was such a big deal, and having that returned and having that replaced. And I don't know if you have that same kind of experience.
Oh, Mona, I wish I could say I hadn't, but you're absolutely, there are banks who got into EB5. A lot of times it came based on a relationship. So it wasn't something that was fully vetted. We had an issuer or regional center who was trying to take advantage of preferential loan terms by promising to put the subscription escrow in the same bank. And because it was the same team who was working on the loan, thinking they could also handle the EB5, they didn't understand all of the nuances of the overlap of securities law and immigration law that was going to really be essential. Right. And unfortunately, we have seen banks that made poor decisions that impacted the immigration side, and they just didn't expect it.
Yeah. What do you see as the future right now as far as banks concerned? Do you think that we just have to go out and find the right banks and communicate? I've still got my fingers crossed that the team from Signature Bank can go and establish a new account somewhere else.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of us that hope to see that. And I do think it's a possibility. In the meantime, what I see is a shift, and it's a shift in priorities. A couple of months ago, the market was talking about the Fed keeps raising rates. We want to maximize return. And so people were shopping other banks to see where they could find the best interest rate on the EB5 funds. And after this past week, I'm seeing a shift in, okay, maybe earning money is less important than keeping the current principal safe. And so people are looking at options of what can we do to make sure that the investor's full investment amount actually comes into the project and creates jobs so they can get their green cards.
Interesting. I didn't even know that people were shopping for interest rates.
Oh, yes. And that's what brings in the inexperienced banks.
Yeah. So what have you seen happening in these kind of circumstances?
There are a couple of programs out there. American Deposit Management is a company that we've worked with for several years. And what they do is they take the deposits and split it over multiple financial institutions. And by doing so, they can keep the balances for any particular investor below the FDIC limit. And they're able to ensure 100% FDIC insurance for each investor this way.
Somebody else brought this up in a lawyer's chat that I saw this week about splitting up the amount. And I saw another lawyer respond by saying that the paperwork would be far too onerous and we'd be asking for an RFE if that happened.
Well, if you were to try and split it yourself, I would agree. But because of the way American Deposit Management is structured, you're opening the account through them. Yeah. There's full transparency should there be any RFE of which banking institutions have which dollars. And there's not a lot of paperwork. It's the same as opening a bank account.
So are you able to also open, because this is where Signature was very good, they could open accounts for overseas individuals, for overseas companies very easily, actually. And when you compare that to opening bank accounts around the world, like, for example, if you want to go and open a bank account in Dubai or Hong Kong, it's a nightmare. There's so much paperwork. And we didn't need any of that for Signature.
That's right. And Signature was unique in that aspect. We are working with a number of different banks to see who else might be able to mimic that program. But at this point, I don't have one that can open a bank account for an individual investor who's not able to come into the branch and prove their identity.
Well, I wish you all the best, Jill, in finding a bank or perhaps a couple of banks that can mimic that program. But let me ask you this. What does JTC actually do with regards to the banking? Are you merely oversight or a fund manager?
Yes, and that's a great distinction. We are not a fund manager. We leave that to the experts, but we are a fund administrator. And the difference there is the fund administrator is more important in terms of transparency, books and records, notifying. What we do is really make sure all of the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and all of the numbers add up to what they're supposed to, so that the project managers and the fund managers can concentrate on doing the development and putting the money to use to create jobs.
Interesting. Jill, did you see anything relating to a lack of confidence because so much of EB-5 money was associated with Signature Bank, with a single bank, that there was a lack of confidence in the American banking system sort of situation?
Well, I don't think it was specific to EB-5, but certainly after two banks went down.
Yeah.
We had Silicon Valley Bank and then Signature Bank. There's certainly an attention drawn to the regional and super regional sized banks. And unfortunately for us, that's the sweet spot for EB-5.
Yeah.
The larger banks don't choose to participate. It's something that they don't have time to really develop programs and compliance procedures around. The regionals and the super regionals do.
But you know what the irony of all of this is? That these banks went down because of cryptocurrency, which I don't know why they put so much into it, which is not safe in any means of the word. People say EB-5 is not safe. You know, it is an irony within itself. But the Signature made a lot of money, or they opened a lot of accounts from accounts stemming from escrow. So, for example, if we would bring in a project to Signature, not only would they open up the escrow account, but then they opened up the account with the NCE and the JCE, and then possibly a few personal accounts, and then other spin-off accounts. So one project could bring them multiple accounts.
That's right. And we're still seeing that with the banks that are participating in EB-5 today.
Hence, the big banks should look into it.
I think the big banks are happy to step in at the point where the NCE or the JCE are the owners of the money. They just don't want to touch it at the point where it belongs to foreign individuals.
You know, the other thing, Jill, I did like about Signature Bank also was the fact that they were very involved within EB-5. So you would see people, representatives from Signature Bank, coming to all the EB-5 events, lobbying for EB-5. They were members of IIUSA. That we won't see with other banks coming in. Or is your experience different?
No, I think there are a number of other banks that came not in as much of a force as Signature Bank. Customers Bank has been a participant in the industry for a while now. They are going to be more active than they were before. Truist Bank, formerly SunTrust Bank, was an active participant, and they'll be active more. And American Deposit Management is going to be making themselves known as well. I know that they had attended a few IIUSA conferences with us over the years.
So if an investor comes to you, or rather a project comes to you and asks you what is the most appropriate bank for their needs, how do you differentiate?
Well, the first question we're going to ask them is, what is your number one priority? If the number one priority is 100% FDIC insurance, then we know we've got to go to American Deposit Management. If it's a relationship sort of reasoning, if they're looking to maximize the returns on their other accounts, or as I said before, loan terms, then we look at the bank that they want to go to, and then we have to go through a process to vet them. What is their experience in EB-5, and are we going to run into any issues after the account is opened? You mentioned an issue with a bank taking fees out of the account. The other things we worry about is, once the money starts coming in from overseas, might the bank shut it down? Or might they create a policy that they're not willing to accept money from certain countries?
That's my next question. That was exactly.
So not all banks are willing to do it. And it's been my experience to really spend a lot of time with the bank's compliance department before we actually take the step to open an account, and really try and figure out, are they in this and they're going to be the right bank for this issuer?
Yeah, that is a real issue because moving away from the project developer and moving over to the source of funds, again, Signature Bank were so much better than the people in the competition within the industry. Community Bank, for example, would take forever to vet someone's money. And especially when so many of these petitions are time sensitive, you know, Signature Bank, you could just pick up the phone and you really could communicate with them. And I believe Signature Bank were one of the few banks which would accept money from places like Iran. And although they did do their due diligence, but they did accept it from all of these more difficult countries. And Jill, as you know, we're not dealing, this is not 2015 anymore where we're dealing with just a handful of countries. We're literally dealing with the entire world.
You're absolutely right. And whether it's currency restrictions on the export of the funds or it's an OFAC restriction, there are lots of hoops for us to jump through.
Do you think USCIS would have a problem if, say, for example, there was a smaller known boutique bank who suddenly decided to pick up EB-5? Or do you think they wouldn't really care?
No, I've not seen USCIS take a position about the bank itself. Where I'd see them taking a position is, what are the bank's procedures? What are they doing for due diligence on the investors and the funds to make sure that we're not laundering money or funding terrorism, all of the things that give EB-5 a bad name.
So, Jill, I know we've had people from NES, not JTC, on our show before, but I don't believe you've been on our show before. And I've been trying to get you on for such a long time. So I'm really, really glad that you're here. But now that you're here, I've got another question for you. You
I'm ready.
ready? So here is another issue that we are looking at. We all know there has been such a delay in some of the adjudications. We're looking at projects having maybe some of them having 4 and 5 years delays. There's money sitting in escrow for some time, which is just not doing anything. The project's done. They found money elsewhere to complete their construction, or they found bridge funding elsewhere, and that money is now is still sitting in escrow. We are terribly worried that we're going to get a string of RFEs relating to the fact that this money has not been sustained within the project, or this money has not been used. Have you seen anything yet? Do you have any response?
Oh, yes. Welcome to my world. This is something since the flood of new projects in 2015, where the holdback structure was almost a standard in every single offering, we're now 8 years beyond that. And these projects were never intended to last this long. And so we have a number of different ways people have come to us to fix the problem. And one of them, as we're approaching the end of the construction, is there's an amendment done. And the amendment done is not to the escrow agreement. And unfortunately, people like to call and they think we'll change the escrow agreement and all is well. But keep in mind, this is a securities offering. And that holdback is a concept that was woven through the offering documents, the subscription documents. It's ingrained into this offering. And so you can't just go off and change one piece without having everything else go to match it. And so it does require maybe a supplement to the PPM or a notification and consent sent to the investors that are impacted. But that is something that's actually been done quite a few times.
But Jill, but this is the problem that we're seeing is that within a project, even if we've brought forward a supplement and we've faced this several times, half of the investors will say, fine, here, sign off and out, you can use my money. And a lot of the investors will not.
That's interesting. So, what is the reason that they're choosing not to say, release my money?
Because they think that if they don't get an approval or there is some issue, their money's already gone into the project and they won't get that money back. Yeah, that's because they're seeing that's happened. Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So, the other side of that conversation then is if these investors are agreeing to let the money out of holdback, they are in fact saying, I'm releasing the money that was sitting there to refund me just in case I were denied. And so the conversation we have with the issuers is, what is your plan should any of these investors end up with a denial? And a lot of times, the scary part is those that haven't been adjudicated yet are lagging because they may have gotten an RFE. So there is a chance they will get denied. And so what we see people put in as a backstop is either a guarantee from an entity that's involved in the transaction, or they will have a letter of credit where there's money available to be drawn upon. But we do ask that they put something in place or be very clear with the investors that there isn't going to be any refund until there's a liquidation event. And that's a scary concept. And if I'm the investor, I probably don't want to sign that either. I'm looking for the corporate guarantee or the letter of credit.
Yeah, but at the same time, we have to explain to the investor that USCIS will come back and say, or may come back and say, look, your money has not been deployed X amount of years. But it also matters, I suppose, if the project has used bridge financing to cover the money sitting in escrow, because then they're all right.
That's right. That gives them more time. They're not forced to have the money out before the construction or the development is completed.
But here's the big but. The interest rates of bridge financing right now is astronomical.
Oh, it's always been astronomical. That's the drawback to bridge financing. We'll give you a band-aid to get you through, but you're going to pay for it.
So indirectly, then it will come back from the investor, perhaps having their repayment of their capital over longer years or something.
It is possible, yeah.
I can see a number of issues coming up from escrow then. So we really have to rethink how we do escrow, because personally, I think it's important. It keeps everybody on their toes. It's not just that. I feel that it just brings another layer of caution and another layer of scrutiny to all the investors' funds. So I wouldn't like to see
Perhaps.
Escrow taken out.
Yeah, I would hate to send the message today that escrow causes a delay.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's fair to highlight that new projects coming into market today versus those in 2015 don't have holdbacks. And that's the exact reason why.
Oh, we still have holdbacks on most of our projects, but it's a lot less. Back in 2015, it would be about 25%, whereas now we're looking at 5 and 10%.
I'm not sure the percentage solves the problem, though. You're still short of money in the project, aren't you?
Yeah, the hope is that the project, that they do release the money should it go beyond a certain time. And I have seen that now being put into PPMs, that should there be a delay, that there would be a request and there would be a possibility that the manager would accede to releasing funds. And this is brand new. I haven't seen this before.
The benefits of hindsight, yes. We've seen how this movie plays out and our offerings get smarter and smarter.
Oh my God, yes. Compare the offerings to how they were, what, about 10 years ago?
Well, they're certainly longer.
Yeah, but Jill, you know, the issues with escrow that you've just mentioned and all of the noise in the uproar about Signature Bank relate to a certain type of developer and project. The type of developer and project who really try to do things the right way by the book. They'll use escrow. They'll go and find people like yourself. I mean, NES, JDC, there are not many of you. There's only one NES, which is why I keep calling you NES. But there's only one JTC. I don't know of multiple JTCs out there. So where I see the issue is, and I think the message I would like to get across are for the smaller developers who've not really utilized any service or escrow account. And can I ask you, Jill, have you ever been brought into a project midway to clean up a mess?
We certainly have. There's a couple varieties of that, Mona, and I chuckle a little bit because we have a unique name for those projects in our office, and we call them retrofits.
Oh.
And it doesn't have anything to do with tie-dye or bell-bottom pants, but it's a retrofit because it started a while ago and we're going to look back. We're going to retro it and we're going to go and dig up the documents that are needed to build an audit trail. Because even before everything got stirred up this week about security and transparency, you have to look back at why EB-5 got so popular back in 2008, 2009 in the first place. People were looking for ways to get financing at a less expensive price where banks were really tight and traditional financing wasn't available. And so we saw a lot of developers come in who were looking to get their hands on some of this money, and they failed to think far enough down the road in the process. They did what they needed to raise the money from overseas, and they did what they needed to put the money into the project. But many of them forgot to think about the next step, which is the 829 filings. And all of the documents and the data that are needed to put together those petitions. And so a retrofit is something that we created to go back and build an audit trail. We're going to go back and find evidence of all the wires coming in, the wires going out, Where are the invoices that support how the money was spent? How many jobs were created? What documents do you have for your direct and indirect jobs? Or did you use an economist who used one of their platforms to estimate the number of jobs that were created? So a retrofit really goes back and builds it after the fact. And it's a challenge. It's absolutely a challenge to go backwards and create it after it's happened.
I can't agree more. And I think we've seen our fair share of messed up projects. And we need more people like JTC to come out there and help.
Well, I thank you for that. We do feel like we have been preaching best practices for a number of years. And when the Reform and Integrity Act came out last year, we felt like Congress and USCIS are agreeing with us now. Best practices includes a third party, an independent third party who's got eyes on the project and making sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing.
And I think that given all of what's happened with Signature Bank this week, I think that if you decide to be a little bit less traditional and a little bit more creative with your banking, I don't think it's going to be frowned upon by USCIS as much as it might have a few weeks ago.
I agree. Being creative with who your bank is much less impactful than being creative with your compliance. As long as you're buttoned up on compliance, USCIS is going to support it.
Yeah, for sure. Jill, as always, your opinions are so insightful. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, Mona, thank you for my inaugural experience on your podcast. Lucky year number 7. I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshawlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.